G'day and welcome to a US of Ed special on the race for the White House 2020. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider, an internationally recognised leader in urban development and planning, advisor, author, and one of the two hosts on this podcast. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. We're joined this week by Dana Rawls and Stephanie Zinegamar. Dana Rawls is a researcher, writer, and editor with 20 years of media and communications experience. A global citizen, she's worked in several countries and has a passionate interest in technology, media, and human rights, and how they work together to contribute to humanity's social and economic development. Stephanie Zinegamar is a native of Washington, D.C., with a lifelong interest in politics. She was nearly born in the White House during the Carter administration and volunteered on the Clinton campaign in high school. She holds a BA in political science from Duke University and a master's degree from the University of Sydney. She currently resides in Sydney, Australia and works in the talent, people and culture industry. She remains politically active as the Democrats Abroad Australia Global Black Caucus Chair. Ed, for those who have already gotten it out of the way, early voting, we're seeing record numbers of people turning out early for this election. Why is that?
Well, I think Mr. Trump did that for us. He said, you better do it twice. So people are going to the polls, bringing their mail with them. I think he scared people into voting, believe it or not. Even with COVID, people are going to vote. They're keeping their social distance and all that because they're unfortunately not voting rapidly for Joe Biden. They're voting against Donald Trump for COVID and for denying them the vote. People are ticked. I would say another word, but we're on radio and television. That's why. I think we're up to 7 million now. Already
17 million.
17 million, I'm sorry.
17 million have already voted. And Sean, in addition to what Ed said, you know, Trump did scare a lot of people. And I know in my home state of Georgia, the voter suppression efforts have been astronomical. And other states like Texas and North Carolina and so many states, people are terrified that their votes aren't going to be counted, that their ability to even get to the polls will be, and you know, they'll face these quote unquote poll watchers that Trump has, you know, amassed this army of 50,000 people that will come to the polls. And a lot of people are saying, look, this is my right. This is my privilege. This is my duty as an American. And I'm not going to, you know, throw that aside. And this is the most important election of my lifetime. And a lot of people are going out and they're voting in record numbers, including in my home state of Georgia. And I am so happy and so excited to see it. It is absolutely fantastic.
I think it's, you know, it's really heartening to see the motivation and the determination that people have, because the lines are long. And you know, it's not like they're just going, driving up, dropping off their ballot and leaving. Some of them are waiting for, what, 6, 7, 8 hours.
Exactly.
You know, especially during a pandemic. And it just shows that when people are determined, and like Ed said, determined to vote him out, that they will go to whatever lengths they need to. And especially when people see that their rights are being taken away, is that they're even more determined. They're doubling down on that effort. And so I think that's really, really encouraging to see.
I really do find that
if we win, we're going to have to come up with some policies.
Exactly. Joe's got that covered, though. I'm honestly not worried about that at all.
I got to say, I really do find it commendable, those individuals, some of them up to 11 hours in Georgia waiting to cast their ballots. I mean, as an Australian, I'm outraged if I turn up to my polling place and they don't have a sausage sizzle. I cannot imagine waiting 11 hours to cast my vote in any country that can be considered a democracy.
Well, considering the fact you don't have a job, 11 hours is nothing. You'd have been on the job. But they take the jobs away from us, so we might as well go to the polls.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that would be a great entrepreneurial effort for someone, you know, bringing democracy sausage to the people waiting in line.
I think
that's being done in Georgia.
Exactly. Yeah, so a fish fry, I mean, something. There's definitely opportunity there. But I tell you, this year has been absolutely insane in terms of the votes. Starting with the primaries. I mean, I found out personally from an investigator that my primary ballot never made it this year, despite me having mailed it several weeks in advance. So trying to be proactive, I put my general election ballot in a registered post envelope, only to have been told last week that it's been sitting in a mail warehouse in Melbourne. Since then, and I put it in the mail on the 18th of September.
Wow.
So I know. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can imagine the rage. And I was absolutely gutted when they told me that. So I, for the first time in my entire life, I've actually had to do the FWAB, you know, the federal write-in absentee ballot, because I am that determined that my vote will be counted. And I know there's tens of millions of people that are standing in those lines for 10, 11 hours that are willing to do whatever it takes. They are not going to take my vote from me. That includes Australia Post. That includes the state of Georgia. I will be voting one way or the other. So yeah. That motivation is definitely felt, I think, worldwide.
Dana, I just wanted to reiterate one of the things you mentioned before in one of your answers there. Trump's call out to his supporters to watch polling places to make sure nothing, in his eyes, nothing dodgy is going on. It sounds to me like this is a recipe for a tragedy.
No, it sounds exactly that way to me as well, Sean. There are certain tests, there are certain criteria that make people qualify to be poll watchers in every state. And I'm just guessing here, looking at the quality of the people that he has working in the highest levels of the administration, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say I'm pretty sure that most of the people that are going to be these poll watchers don't have a lot of those qualifications. I mean, it is astonishing that a presidential campaign feels that it has any legal standing whatsoever, particularly a presidential campaign that it represents the party that has been found throughout decades to have been absolutely creative when it comes to the levels of voter suppression. And the fact that this campaign feels in any way qualified to send out poll watchers to, in my opinion, to for the sole purpose of intimidating people. And I'm sure that it'll be just a coincidence that they'll be focused primarily in poor neighborhoods, minority areas. I think your assessment that this is a tragedy in the making is 100% correct. And I think that that is exactly what the plan is.
Yeah, I want poll watchers from the United Nations.
Mm. Mm, exactly. Or, you know, from the
this
Carter
Center.
This
is a crippled state.
Yeah, the Carter Center or some of these organizations where they train people for years to do this and to know what they're looking for. I don't want some guy that's a Trump supporter who just has nothing else to do to go and be intimidating and standing around watching people voting. I mean, this if it's not illegal, it should be.
It is.
COVID-19, unforgettably, we saw Trump himself, along with a number of associates and top Republicans, contract the disease a couple of weeks ago. This sent both sides into a spin, kind of scrambling with how to best work this into a election narrative. 2 weeks out, what kind of impact is it having now?
I think it's quite interesting that, you know, from Trump's point of view, obviously he had something, but he's made this miraculous recovery and he's portraying himself as, oh, I'm strong enough, I'm this perfect physical specimen, which we all know is probably highly unlikely. So he's able to downplay the risk associated with COVID-19, and he's able to downplay the disease, which is what he's been doing over the past 12 months, really. And so you contrast that with Kamala Harris, who at the first hint that her campaign had been touched by, I think, the pilots of her charter plane, you know, she said, right, I'm not campaigning anymore. I'm just going to take a little pause to let everyone get tested and isolate and to really do what I would see and what from Australian point of view would be the right thing in terms of isolating. And
that's
and,
right. That is such a good point. That is such a great point, Stephanie.
But you also have people like Chris Christie, who, you know, clearly was so close to Trump that he didn't want to be seen as going against him, but who wound up in the ICU and then said, you know, I wore a mask, I did the right things for months, I didn't do it for 4 days and almost died. So I think you really see this kind of very sharp contrast between trying to, I guess, play the party line throughout the campaign.
But COVID is the number one issue.
Absolutely.
Because the numbers are going up in spite of what he says.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
On COVID and financial stimulus, Trump initially said Americans would not see any more relief until he was returned at the election. Now, this has gone back and forth, but how are we seeing the stimulus debate now play out for voters?
Well, Nancy is given a Tuesday deadline.
Mm.
Now, one of the problems has been that Nancy Pelosi and everyone else knows the top numbers, but they don't know the details. Apparently, the program, from what I've heard from some of the insiders, that Trump has offered is a program where all the money goes to business and to farmers. And $1,000 handouts and some uptick on paychecks. So the biggest beneficiaries from this, like the first one, is going back to the same people, the airlines, et cetera. I have no problem with that as long as the people get their share. But this is a vote grabbing issue with him. He even wanted the letters all to be signed by him, going to individuals and to the farmers. This is a big deal for farmers because they're way down this year. If he can get those farmers a few million bucks, he might keep Iowa.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Ed, because I noticed I've been reading that Mitch McConnell, and there's quite a bit of daylight even between Mitch McConnell and the White House on the latest efforts. I mean, so the White House with Steve Mnuchin are basically trying to get, and Pelosi obviously are trying to get closer to $2 trillion. McConnell's trying to keep it around, I believe, $500 billion.
Walking around money, $500 billion.
Exactly.
This is not for us, for the show.
So it's just kind of makes you wonder. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think that this daylight between even the White House and Senate Republicans, this is something that's going to happen even after the election happens?
I think one thing that's really important to realize is that, you know, they're playing politics and with people's lives. People are on the verge of serious personal, economic, and financial collapse. Their rent, you know, a lot of them can't pay their rent. You know,
including Trump supporters.
Pay their rent. Yes.
Exactly.
You know, they don't have access to healthcare because their employment's, you know, they're not working, so they don't have the health coverage. So people in America, there are lots of people who are on the cliff that they are about to fall off. So whether it's, you know, Pelosi's plan or Trump's plan or whoever's plan, the US is facing a serious economic issue just around the corner.
Yeah.
When people and to do some start, extent, getting interested in things.
Some of the Democrats have been speaking out against Pelosi, saying give some money, any money to anybody. And I'm there too.
Yeah.
Let's just move on.
Yeah.
It's not going to change anybody's vote at this point.
No. But it could save a lot of people from homelessness coming
absolutely
in and all of these other problems. I mean, when you think about children who aren't necessarily going to school, for some underprivileged children, that's where they eat. If they're meant to be homeschooling and there's no food in the house, then what?
Yeah,
it's a very sad situation.
Another issue that's affecting votes in this election are the hearings for Amy Coney Barrett. Now, this has been a bit of a shambles, really. We all know this is on the numbers. The hearings have been purely a point scoring exercise. In that sense, what kind of impact are they having?
Well, Amy is a Weaver and a Dodger. She and Muhammad Ali could be well matched together and never land a blow because she can sting like a butterfly and flow like a butterfly and sting like a bee. She hasn't scored any judicial points, interestingly enough. So we really don't know where she stands on judicial issues, other than that she's an opportunist.
Right.
So what the Democrats have done is keep hammering their issues, not just before the courts, but other issues. Like White House pointed out how you buy judges, how Republican judges are bought in the federal system. Others have pointed out that healthcare, like Harris, is the big issue here. Others have brought up social justice issues. So what the Democrats are doing is running their campaign in these hearings. Since the hearings are a sham, they know the only thing she could do is snort some cocaine in the hearings. and that might not even do it.
Exactly.
You put out. So when you announce a person's going to be appointed before they even go to the hearings, that game is over. Many people have been critical about Feinstein because she hasn't been vicious in these hearings as she was in the last one. But her reasoning is being vicious will lose votes out in the general public. And what we should do is get votes by running our issues through this device, call it a hearing. So I think the Democrats know what it is. The court is likely to be packed.
Well, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people have just completely shown very little interest in the hearings. As much of a policy and politics wonk as I am, I refuse to watch them because it is such a disgrace. It is such a sham, exactly like you said, Ed. And I do think the Democrats have scored some points. They hurt her a bit with the focus on the Affordable Care Act. They're saying it's very clear that this woman is a threat to the to Obamacare as well as to abortion. But it almost feels like a moot point in some regards, because as you said, unless she, you know, comes in and snorts cocaine and, you know, sacrifices a Romanian orphan on the floor of the Senate of these hearings, there's nothing's going to change. She will very likely be confirmed, and it will be an absolute and utter travesty for the Supreme Court and for the country.
By after November 3rd, by some members on that committee who will no longer be in office.
Yay.
And by a president who would no longer be in office.
Yes.
I don't believe that has ever happened in the history of the United States.
With 17 million people that have already voted. Yeah. This is the crux of the issue for me.
Yeah.
Polls are showing pretty much incredible results for Biden. 10-12% ahead of Trump nationwide. Better than any challenger in modern times. But I say for myself, and I think this may be true for you as well, I have a visceral memory of in 2016 watching the New York Times clock start at 95% likely win for Hillary Clinton and slowly ticking around to 95% Trump. Steph, I'll put this one to you first. Can we trust polls? And indeed, are people going to be lulled into a false sense of security by them?
Sean, I remember watching that. I remember Election Day 2016 very, very vividly because I was about 8 months pregnant and I was wearing a Hillary Clinton t-shirt. And I was, you know, sitting at home on my couch watching the election results come in with a friend, and we both just started crying. And I called my mother, who was actually in the Javits Center, you know, with all the Hillary supporters, and you know, it was just silent in there. So after that experience, I don't trust polls. Up until I see Biden with his hand on the Bible on the Capitol steps on January 20th.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't want to put any.
But what the polls have taught us is not to trust them.
Yeah. Exactly.
And go vote. Yeah. That's the best poll.
That's right.
The polling place is the best poll.
What are we kind of seeing in some of the battleground states here at the moment?
Well,
I am very excited. Sorry, Ed. I'm sorry. I have to say that as a proud resident of the great state of Georgia, Biden is up by, I believe, 2 points in the last poll that I saw. And John Ossoff, who is the Senate, Democratic Senate nominee, is up as well as Raphael Warnock, the Reverend, who is up for the special election. Now, again, as Stephanie has already so brilliantly said, polls, we don't trust them. But I can't tell you as a Georgian how proud it makes me to even just have this tangible evidence in front of me that it is possible to win even in a blood red state like Georgia. I'm praying with all my heart, and I've certainly done my part to make sure that these three great candidates win. But if this happens in the state of Georgia, I think this will have a tremendous impact on national politics, full stop.
You'll dance all the way home.
I will dance. Oh, I will dance.
Let me take, there are only two states that really count in this. Florida and Pennsylvania. Mm. If Biden takes Florida, I think we can take a nap.
Okay.
If Biden takes Florida, if Trump takes Florida, we have to wait for Pennsylvania.
Right, absolutely.
So Biden has two bites at the apple. Let's hope he takes the first bite, because it's the only state where Trump believes the elections can be right. Mm. He said, my state runs them in the right way. Mm. Well, let's hope they run them in the right way and he is the loser.
Actually, this is rather interesting.
Hillary Clinton had 100,000 more votes in all four of those industrial states. That's 25,000 per state. If the minority vote had come out in each of those states, Clinton would have won.
Exactly.
But let's be honest. None of us were excited about Hillary.
No.
I was. I love. I'm a big Hillary. Let me just put it out there right now. My mother is a classmate of Hillary's from Wellesley, so we're big Hillary people. So yes. Please don't talk about my girl. Don't talk bad about Hillary.
But what I'm saying is, she wasn't generating that enthusiasm.
No, she wasn't.
And people took a punt for Trump. Mm-hmm. They're not taking the punt for Trump anymore.
Well, it astonishes me the number of people who were saying, well, I watched The Celebrity Apprentice and I was such a big fan of his. So of course I'm going to vote for him to be the president. And I that logic just escapes me. I know that was 2016.
Now he's still running The Celebrity Apprentice. It's now in the White House.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's been the worst season ever of any reality show. So I'm hoping that these people who were so wowed by his tan, I guess that's what it's supposed to be, and his flowing golden locks and his 6 foot gold letters and this lavish lifestyle that he has portrayed, whether it's actually true or not. I hope that these people have kind of woken up, that they are realizing this is not a game show. This is not something that we should be, you know, playing around with. This is something that's serious. I have to say, Ed, I also think Georgia and Texas might be pretty big states. What do you think in terms of the big battleground ones this year?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm thinking Trump. If Trump doesn't win Florida, there's no way he can win.
Okay.
None.
Well, a bit of a shine has come off the gold-plated toilet, such as it were.
Good.
One that might be very significant in deciding the Florida race, amongst others, of course, is people are talking about seniors abandoning Trump, which sort of hasn't been helped by Trump's frequent age-related attacks on the supposedly sleepy, senile Joe Biden. The one thing we know about seniors, red or blue, is that they do vote. What's the
and
impact
they do
of
read.
Yeah? What's the impact likely to be this election around seniors?
There are three groups of seniors. The Florida seniors tend to be educated seniors who are from someplace in the Northeast usually, and so they read. They've been reading all year long. I saw one of them had a list of every lie Trump told. living there in the villages and passing that around. So the first group are those who are highly engaged in politics, very astute. The next group is that group who vote basically because they see it on TV. They watch it. They're watchers and doers. And then the last group, and this is the group that Trump held and he's still holding on to a little bit, is the followers who are evangelicals, who, you know, when you get older, tend to go to church or join a cause or what have you. Even they're falling away, though. What is it, Stephanie? 65% of seniors are going for Biden?
Something like that. So I think what they're voting on is they're voting on COVID, because seniors are a high-risk group. And they're the ones who've missed out on seeing their grandchildren. They're the ones who haven't been able to live their normal lives, especially active, healthy, you know, over 65s who are in that high risk group. So they're looking at Trump to say, you've ruined my life. I can't see my grandbabies. I can't do this. I can't do that. And that's what they're going out to vote. You know, they want him out of office to get that change.
No, I agree 100%. It's definitely COVID. It's absolutely COVID. I mean, there are lots of other factors in play. And when you're talking about seniors, as with every other group, even in evangelicals, race plays always a huge part in it. So when we talk about Florida seniors, we're talking about Hispanic seniors. We're talking about, you know, people who have come from countries where they've seen authoritarians like Trump try so desperately to be. And I mean, there's all of that in play too. I mean, there's no question, but I do think for a lot of people 65 and up, it's COVID. It has completely upended their lives. I mean, it's upended everyone's lives, but particularly theirs. And they have seen the complete and utter lack of leadership that's come from this White House. They have seen this man openly say, I take no responsibility for anything. And they're turning away from him. And I think it's fantastic.
And I think just on that point is that it's really starting to impact coming into the holidays. You know, people have gone now 9 months, some of them almost, without seeing their family. Thanksgiving's coming up. To tell grandma, grandpa, sorry, we can't come for Thanksgiving because of COVID, or to not be able to travel to see your family for COVID, that really is going to make a lot of people think twice about whether they're better off than they were 4 years ago or 12 months ago. So I think that's going to have a big impact as well.
On the other end of the scale, young voters, overwhelmingly concerned about issues of equality and social justice, overwhelmingly likely to vote blue. But that's if they vote at all. I mean, what are we seeing in terms of first-time young voters and their impact on this race?
That's something to use, Dad.
Okay. I was going to say, young people are idealistic, they're optimistic, but they're also very unreliable. So I haven't seen any data around the age breakdown, but you know, young people are the first people to be out in the streets, but often the last people to actually be in the polls. So if we can motivate the young voters who are so idealistic, who are so, you know, pro change, I suppose. If we can get them into the voting booth, I think we will definitely win the election. But how do you do that? I think that's the age old question. How do you turn motivation into action?
And again, when it comes to young voters, just as with old voters, you have to break that down by race. So when you look at young voters, you look at Hispanic young voters, they call themselves the sleeping giant, which I love. And according to many polls in states where there are large Hispanic populations in Florida and Arizona, they are registering to vote, which is incredible. Now let's just make that next big step, which is to actually vote, and we will start to see some really incredible changes.
Yeah, particularly in the Southwest.
Exactly.
Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's already happened in Colorado.
Debates, I can't really see either team seeing it as particularly advantageous to have this sort of final debate we're looking at. Trump was a disaster in the first debate and really seems to be running scared since, but Biden didn't exactly come across brilliantly either, and the risk is there that he could shoot himself in the foot when the polls keep going up and up otherwise, you know, if he just sort of stays out of the way. Does a final debate matter?
Sean, I think disaster is a nice way of putting of how I would describe the first debate. Like Ed said before, it's a family show. So what I really think of it, I can't say. I think America lost the first debate. So I don't think that there's anything to be gained by having a third debate or a second debate at this stage. However, debating has been such an important part of the political process in the US for the last couple hundred years, but certainly since, you know, Nixon and Kennedy, the first televised debate. You know,
actually, since Lincoln.
Well, yes, yes. So hundreds of years going back.
Lincoln Douglas.
Absolutely.
So it would be a shame if it didn't happen, but with these two candidates, I think it would almost be a shame if it did. So it's,
I can wholly agree with you on that one.
I do too. I don't see the point of another debate, and Donald Trump embarrassed himself, and that is really a difficult thing
to
do.
Well, that could be the point.
For Donald Trump to embarrass himself, you know, his behavior must have been absolutely insane. And I don't, the second one, they had the dueling town halls, and Trump lost to Biden in terms of viewership, despite the fact that Trump's town hall played on NBC, MSNBC, and CNBC. Biden's only played on ABC. Trump did not win in terms of viewership. And the third debate, or I'm sorry, the second one, 17 million people have already voted. I don't know what the point is.
Well, the point is keeping the tradition. Now, again, this time, I have to look to Biden to be Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And let him throw all the punches, duck, weave, dodge. The smart thing for him to say is, I'm not answering any question unless it comes from the moderator.
Absolutely. And
don't
nothing,
answer anything, because the Hunter Biden stuff is
going to
be
I was just
wild.
About to say, they're going to just bring up Hunter, 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 Hunter.
And Hunter's not on the ballot, to the best of my knowledge.
Exactly.
Is Ivanka on the ballot? She's been in the White House.
It's absolutely ludicrous, the focus that they have. And, you know, you keep hearing about this enthusiasm gap. Well, I can't wait for the media to drop that narrative, because it has really gotten on my nerves. Biden is winning in every poll. And I know we don't trust polls, but there are two ways to really kind of measure the efficacy of a campaign. How are you doing in the polls, and how are you doing in the fundraising? Biden is killing Trump in both of those, and has now trounced him in terms of viewership. If I keep hearing about this enthusiasm gap, I'm going to scream. The American public is enthusiastically voting against Donald Trump.
Well, that's the enthusiasm we're talking about.
We'll take that.
Biden has something like $500 million or something to spend in the next few weeks. It's an astronomical figure that he's raised, which is fantastic. But, you know, now what? what do you do with that amount of money in 2 weeks?
Exactly.
Actually, I just wanted to talk about
the White House.
Yeah, a couple of the last sort of practicalities, one of which was fundraising. I mean, the Democrats are a long way ahead of the Trump campaign when it comes to fundraising. I mean, the Trump campaigns are kind of hemorrhaged money in this situation. In those battleground states that we kind of mentioned before, what kind of impact are we seeing? What kind of ways are we seeing the money spent?
Well, and Steph, you know more about this than I do, but I understand there's a ground game now.
I believe so, yes.
Before it was all on the airwaves on a telephone, but now people are in the streets. I won't see the stuff on TV, but Michael Moore is not complaining about the ground game anymore, so there must be something to it.
I'm hoping that they're spending the money on getting people to the polls. You know, I hope that maybe there's some money for an Uber for people or something like that to get them out of their house and into
and fish fries.
Fish fries.
I love it. I love it.
Chartering buses, socially distanced bus rides, something. Hopefully that's where the money will be spent, is actually getting the votes cast. Because at this point, I would struggle to believe that there are a lot of people who are still undecided, or who would watch an ad and think, oh yeah, that's who I'll vote for based on that ad. But let's get them to the polls and voting.
I decided 4 years ago
It took you that long, Ed?
I know.
Well, it took me a minute.
It didn't even take me that long. When we found out that Hillary lost, I laid on my husband's chest and wept. I have never had that kind of response to a presidential election. I mean, when W won, yes, I was very disappointed. But W had some executive experience. He had been a governor. He was, you know, he had been a part of the Bush political machine. I did not like his policies. I did not support him at all, but I was not terrified the way that I was when I found out that Donald Trump was going to be our next president. And I knew then if he didn't conk over at some point during the election and Pence took over, that regardless, I was going to be doing everything I could to get him out. Especially when we found out the day after his inauguration, he filed paperwork for his reelection. And I just said, this is just reason number 7 jillion for why this guy has got to go. I was committed in November 2016 that there was no way that I was going to ever be okay with him being president.
Hopefully when it comes to November, we won't be saying it's all over but the crying. Any final thoughts on this one? Obviously, the key one seems to be get out there and vote.
Absolutely.
That is the message. If you're in America, go, leave your house, vote, stand in line, get your sandwich, get your fish fry, get your barbecue ribs, whatever you need.
Or go to the mailbox and make sure it's not a Republican mailbox.
Exactly.
It's a U.S. mailbox.
Right. If you're overseas, figure out how to return your ballot.
Yeah.
UPS.
And make sure you look at every direction on there. Because some say sign here, be sure you sign here. It says
That's
initial,
right.
Put your initial in. If it says blue pen or black pen, use a blue or black pen.
That's right.
Do it all right.
Absolutely.
Every vote counts.
Well, of course, we will be coming back to this one come November, come election day itself. Guys, thank you very much. My absolute pleasure chatting with you this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ed and I will be back with our regularly scheduled chats in the next couple of weeks before Election Day, and then with a much larger special on the Election Day itself. Subscribe wherever you might find the podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Wooshka, Spotify, whatever the like, US of Ed, and you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you are so inclined, US of Ed there as well.